Chapter 159. The day not named, I have again the honor to render myself at your house. I intimate that I have something to sell, which, if not bought, will compromise madam whom I highly esteem. I explain myself generally. I demand, I think it was £1,000. Will you correct me? Thus forced to speak, she replied with constraint, you demanded as much as £1,000. I demand at present, too. Such are the evils of delay. But to return once more. We are not accordant, we differ on that occasion. I am playful, playfulness is a part of my amiable character. Playfully, I become as one slain and hidden. For, it may alone be worth half the sum to madam, to be freed from the suspicions that my droll idea awakens. Accident and spies intermix themselves against my playfulness, and spoil the fruit, perhaps who knows? Only you and Flintwinch, when it is just ripe. Thus, madam, I am here for the last time. Listen. Definitely the last. As he struck his straggling boot heels against the flap of the table, meeting her frown with an insolent gaze, he began to change his tone for a fierce one. Bah! Stop an instant. Let us advance by steps. Here is my hotel note to be paid according to contract. 5 minutes hence we may be at dagger's points. I'll not leave it till then, or you'll cheat me. Pay it. Count me the money. Take it from his hand and pay it, Flintwinch, said Mrs. Clennam. He spurted it into Mr. Flintwinch's face, when the old man advanced to take it, and held forth his hand, repeating noisily, pay it. Count it out. Good money. Jeremiah picked the bill up, looked at the total with a bloodshot eye, took a small canvas bag from his pocket, and told the amount into his hand. Rigaud chinked the money, weighed it in his hand, threw it up a little way and caught it, chinked it again. The sound of it, to the bold Rigaud Blandois, is like the taste of fresh meat to the tiger. Say then, madam, how much? He turned upon her suddenly with a menacing gesture of the weighted hand that clenched the money as if he were going to strike her with it. I tell you again, as I told you before, that we are not rich here, as you suppose us to be, and that your demand is excessive. I have not the present means of complying with such a demand, if I had ever so great an inclination. Cried Rigaud. Hear this lady with her if. Will you say that you have not the inclination? I will say what presents itself to me, and not what presents itself to you. Say it then. As to the inclination. Quick. Come to the inclination, and I know what to do. She was no quicker, and no slower, in her reply. It would seem that you have obtained possession of a paper, or of papers which I assuredly have the inclination to recover. Rigaud, with a loud laugh, drummed his heels against the table, and chinked his money. I think so. I believe you there. The paper might be worth, to me, a sum of money. I cannot say how much, or how little. What the devil? He asked savagely. Not after a week's grace to consider? No. I will not out of my scanty means, for I tell you again, we are poor here, and not rich. I will not offer any price for a power that I do not know the worst and the fullest extent of. This is the third time of your hinting and threatening. You must speak explicitly, or you may go where you will, and do what you will. It is better to be torn to pieces at a spring, than to be a mouse at the caprice of such a cat. He looked at her so hard with those eyes too near together, that the sinister sight of each, crossing that of the other, seemed to make the bridge of his hooked nose crooked. After a long survey, he said, with the further setting off of his internal smile, you are a bold woman. I am a resolved woman. You always were. What? She always was. Is it not so, my little Flintwinch? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Flint Winch, say nothing to him. It is for him to say, here and now, all he can, or to go hence, and do all he can. You know this to be our determination. Leave him to his action on it. Apostrophe, she did not shrink under his evil leer, or avoid it. He turned it upon her again, but she remained steady at the point to which she had fixed herself. He got off the table, placed a chair near the sofa, sat down in it, and leaned an arm upon the sofa close to her own, which he touched with his hand. Her face was ever frowning, attentive, and settled. It is your pleasure then, madam, that I shall relate a morsel of family history in this little family society, apostrophe said Rigaud, with a warning play of his lithe fingers on her arm. I am something of a doctor. Let me touch your pulse. Apostrophe, she suffered him to take her wrist in his hand. Holding it, he proceeded to say, a history of a strange marriage, and a strange mother, and a revenge, and a suppression. I? This pulse is beating curiously. It appears to me that it doubles while I touch it. Are these the usual changes of your malady, madam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, there was a struggle in her maimed arm as she twisted it away, but there was none in her face. On his face there was his own smile. I have lived an adventurous life. I am an adventurous character. I have known many adventurers. Interesting spirits, amiable society. To one of them, I owe my knowledge and my proofs, I repeated, estimable lady, proofs of the ravishing little family history I go to commence. You will be charmed with it. But, bah! I forget. One should name a history. Shall I name it the history of a house? But, bah, again. There are so many houses. Shall I name it the history of this house? Apostrophe, apostrophe, leaning over the sofa, poised on two legs of his chair and his left elbow, that hand often tapping her arm, to beat his words home, his legs crossed, his right hand sometimes arranging his hair, sometimes smoothing his mustache, sometimes striking his nose, always threatening her whatever it did, coarse, insolent, rapacious, cruel, and powerful, he pursued his narrative at his ease. And fine, then, I name it the history of this house. I commence it. There live here, let us suppose, an uncle and nephew. The uncle, a rigid old gentleman of strong force of character. The nephew, habitually timid, repressed, and under constraint. Apostrophe, Mistress Affery, fixedly attentive in the window seat, biting the rolled up end of her apron, and trembling from head to foot, here cried out, Jeremiah, keep off from me. I've heard, in my dreams, of Arthur's father and his uncle. He's a talking of them. It was before my time here, but I've heard in my dreams that Arthur's father was a poor, irresolute, frightened chap, who had had everything but his orphan life scared out of him when he was young, and that he had no voice in the choice of his wife even, but his uncle chose her. There she sits. I heard it in my dreams, and you said it to her own self. Apostrophe, as Mr. Flintwinch shook his fist at her, and as Mrs. Clennam gazed upon her, Rigaud kissed his hand to her. Perfectly right, dear Madam Flintwinch. You have a genius for dreaming. Apostrophe, I don't want none of your praises, apostrophe returned Affery. I don't want to have nothing at all to say to you. But Jeremiah said they was dreams, and I'll tell them as such. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here she put her apron in her mouth again, as if she were stopping somebody else's mouth, perhaps Jeremiah's, which was chattering with threats, as if he were grimly cold. Our beloved Madam Flintwinch, apostrophe said Rigaud, developing all of a sudden a fine susceptibility and spirituality, is right to a marvel. Yes. So runs the history. Monsieur, the uncle, commands the nephew to marry. Monsieur says to him in effect, my nephew, I introduce to you a lady of strong force of character, like myself a resolved lady, a stern lady, a lady who has a will that can break the weak to powder. A lady without pity, without love, implacable, revengeful, cold as the stone, but raging as the fire. Ah! What fortitude! Ah, what superiority of intellectual strength! Truly, a proud and noble character, that I describe in the supposed words of Monsieur, the uncle. Ha, ha, ha! Death of my soul, I love the sweet lady! Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Clennam's face had changed. There was a remarkable darkness of color on it, and the brow was more contracted. Madam, madam, apostrophe, said Rigaud, tapping her on the arm, as if his cruel hand were sounding a musical instrument, I perceive I interest you. I perceive I awaken your sympathy. Let us go on. Apostrophe, the drooping nose and the ascending mustache had, however, to be hidden for a moment with the white hand, before he could go on. He enjoyed the effect he made so much. The nephew, being, as the lucid Madame Flintwinch has remarked, a poor devil who has had everything but his orphan life frightened and famished out of him, the nephew abases his head, and makes response. My uncle, it is to you to command. Do as you will. Monsieur, the uncle, does as he will. It is what he always does. The auspicious nuptials take place. The newly married come home to this charming mansion. The lady is received, let us suppose, by Flintwinch. Hey, old intriguer? Apostrophe, Jeremiah, with his eyes upon his mistress, made no reply. Rigaud looked from one to the other, struck his ugly nose, and made a clucking with his tongue. Soon the lady makes a singular and exciting discovery. Thereupon, full of anger, full of jealousy, full of vengeance, she forms, see you, madam, a scheme of retribution, the weight of which she ingeniously forces her crushed husband to bear himself, as well as execute upon her enemy. What superior intelligence! Apostrophe, keep off, Jeremiah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the palpitating Afri, taking her apron from her mouth again. But it was one of my dreams, that you told her, when you quarreled with her one winter evening at dusk, there she sits, and you looking at her, that she oughtn't to have let Arthur, when he come home, suspect his father only, that she had always had the strength and the power, and that she ought to have stood up more to Arthur, for his father. It was in the same dream, where you said to her, that she was not something, but I don't know what, for she burst out tremendous and stopped you. You know the dream as well as I do. When you come downstairs into the kitchen with the candle in your hand, and hitched my apron off my head. When you told me I had been dreaming. When you wouldn't believe the noises. Apostrophe, after this explosion, Afri put her apron into her mouth again, always keeping her hand on the window sill and her knee on the window seat, ready to cry out or jump out, if her lord and master approached. Rigaud had not lost a word of this. Ha ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he cried, lifting his eyebrows, folding his arms, and leaning back in his chair. Assuredly, Madame Flintwinch is an oracle. How shall we interpret the oracle, you and I and the old intriguer? He said that you were not? And you burst out and stopped him. What was it you were not? What is it you are not? Say then, madam. Apostrophe, apostrophe, under this ferocious banter, she sat breathing harder, and her mouth was disturbed. Her lips quivered and opened, in spite of her utmost efforts to keep them still. Come then, madam. Speak then. Our old intriguer said that you were not, and you stopped him. He was going to say, that you were not what? I know already, but I want a little confidence from you. How, then? You are not what? Apostrophe, she tried again to repress herself, but broke out vehemently, not Arthur's mother. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good, apostrophe, said Rigaud. You are amenable. Apostrophe, with the set expression of her face all torn away by the explosion of her passion, and with a bursting, from every rent feature, of the smoldering fire, so long pent up, she cried out. I will tell it myself. I will not hear it from your lips, and with the taint of your wickedness upon it. Since it must be seen, I will have it seen by the light I stood in. Not another word. Hear me. apostrophe, unless you are a more obstinate and more persisting woman than even I know you to be, apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch interposed. You had better leave Mr. Rigaud, Mr. Blandois, Mr. Beelzebub, to tell it in his own way. What does it signify when he knows all about it? Apostrophe, he does not know all about it. Apostrophe, he knows all he cares about it. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch testily urged. He does not know me. Apostrophe, what do you suppose he cares for you, you conceited woman? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Flintwinch. I tell you, Flintwinch, I will speak. I tell you when it has come to this, I will tell it with my own lips, and will express myself throughout it. What? Have I suffered nothing in this room, no deprivation, no imprisonment, that I should condescend at last to contemplate myself in such a glass as that? Can you see him? Can you hear him? If your wife were 100 times the ingrate that she is, and if I were 1,000 times more hopeless than I am of inducing her to be silent, if this man is silenced, I would tell it myself, before I would bear the torment of the hearing it from him. Apostrophe, Rigaud pushed his chair a little back, pushed his legs out straight before him, and sat with his arms folded over against her. You do not know what it is, apostrophe, she went on addressing him, to be brought up strictly and straightly. I was so brought up. Mine was no light youth of sinful gaiety and pleasure. Mine were days of wholesome repression, punishment, and fear. The corruption of our hearts, the evil of our ways, the curse that is upon us, the terrors that surround us, these were the themes of my childhood. They formed my character, and filled me with an abhorrence of evildoers. When old Mr. Gilbert Clennam proposed his orphan nephew to my father for my husband, my father impressed upon me that his bringing up had been, like mine, one of severe restraint. He told me that besides the discipline his spirit had undergone, he had lived in a starved house, where rioting and gaiety were unknown, and where every day was a day of toil and trial like the last. He told me that he had been a man in years long before his uncle had acknowledged him as one, and that from his school days to that hour, his uncle's roof has been a sanctuary to him from the contagion of the irreligious and dissolute. When, within a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.